Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Rob. Why are we so stupid?
Why are you so stupid? You started it.
Yeah, but you kept going like a child. Hey.
Like a boss, you mean. What's new?
What is new? Not a lot.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was really awesome, actually.
Yeah? Why? What was awesome about it?
I have nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about?
So awesome. We'll talk about that in the next show.
Okay. So. All right.
So, yeah. But it was pretty awesome.
Well, good. I'm happy for you.
And I got to play some games and stuff, so that was cool. How about you? What's up with you, Rob?
We had a real bummer of a weekend, man. Weather was kind of cold and bad, and it was just, I don't know. Sometimes you just kind of need a down weekend, don't you? You know? Just kind of just shut everything down and kind of play cool and be antisocial, right? We all have those weekends, don't we?
That's how most of your weekends are spent.
No, not necessarily.
Rob, as everyone knows, is one of the biggest Debbie Downers I've ever met in my life. Ever.
I'm kind of a homebody.
Kind of a Debbie Downer.
Well, all right, get out of my house.
Your house? Do you mean your studio?
My studio. Get out of my studio, you jerk face.
I'm going to take a Snuggie off the wall with me.
No, it was weird. I was lying on the couch on Saturday. And I was watching Mythbusters because there's new episodes of Mythbusters on Netflix right now.
Uh-huh.
And I've been basically watching nothing but Mythbusters since Friday evening. and it was like 4:30 in the afternoon. The power went out. Just gone. Out. Big pop somewhere outside. And it's 4:30 in the afternoon. It's a bright, sunny day. It's a little cool, a little breezy. But nothing, no bad weather, no high winds, nothing. And it's just out. It's just gone.
Wow, that sucks. You know what's awesome about my house?
What?
Never will happen. You know why? Because I have the most awesome backup generator ever.
Oh, that's right.
Automatic natural gas one plumbed into the natural gas.
Right.
Power goes out. 30 seconds later, bam, power goes back on. Mm-hmm. I get excited when the power goes out.
You're like, ooh, my generator's going to come on.
I'm like, ooh, I'm paying slightly more for electricity right now than my natural gas.
Yeah, congratulations for that.
So what? Not to interrupt your awesome story about...
That was the whole story.
Yeah, it was weird, though. I mean, the power goes out in the middle of the day. That doesn't normally happen in Michigan, unless it's...
There's bad weather happening. Yeah. Right.
So
that was the most exciting thing that happened this past weekend.
Sounds exciting.
So, I'm sorry. I have nothing else to add.
Hey, let's talk about games.
Why? Get out of the studio. Well, what have you been playing?
Hey, what have I been playing?
Yeah.
I have been playing... So a friend of the show, AJ from Van Ryder Games, he posted a print and play of a solo game he's working on, and he was nice enough to send it over to me. It's about being a hostage negotiator.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the basic setup of the game is there's a terrorist. They've taken 7 hostages.
Okay.
Why 7? I don't know, but it seems to work really well, so 7 must be a
good
number.
7's a good number.
He may have put a lot of time in determining 7.
Yeah.
My guess is it's an odd number. And it's not 9, so, and 5 was too little. That's my guess.
Sure.
Anyways, so, basically, in the game, you are a hostage negotiator having conversations with a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to manage your threat level, like the terrorist threat level. So if it gets too high, he just starts capping people.
Yeah.
And if it gets low enough, he just starts releasing people one at a time.
Okay.
The goal of the game is to get, if I understand the game correctly, I hope I'm not wrong, but the goal of the game, I believe, is to have at least more than half the hostages survive. So 4.
Okay.
Right? Which seems like a low expectation as a hostage negotiator. But whatever. But it's rough, though. It's not like it's not like a Kevin Spacey movie where Samuel Jackson's like, you want my blood? Take my blood. I mean, it's like the terrorist is crazy, and he's just capping people and stuff all the time. So so basically, the scenario is you've got these conversation cards, and you start with some that cost 0 points. And then throughout the game, you earn more points for each turn so that you can buy more conversation cards. And basically, a conversation card is just like like, one of my favorite ones is, I'm going in, right? So, like, you're going to, like, you're the hostage negotiator, you're going in to talk to the guy, right?
Okay.
And what happens with each card is there's three levels that can happen. There is failure, which means you don't do any successes. I'll explain that in a second. There's one success, which gives you, like, a bonus. And there's two successes, which gives you a good bonus. To get successes, you roll D6s. A 5 or a 6 is a success. I'm not going to get into crazy details, but based on the threat level, that determines how many dice you roll. Higher the threat level, the less dice you get to roll.
Okay.
He also will make demands. He has two major demands you start with. There's four, and you randomly grab two. And he'll present the demands to you throughout the game, and if you concede to those demands, you get a bonus. One of my favorite ones was, there were two that were really good, I thought. One was, he releases two hostages, which that's a, you know, when you, that's 50% of what you need to win the game. And then there's also one that allows you to roll two extra dice for the entire conversation, which when you're only rolling, you know, there's max dice you can roll is five. So five dice compared to, you know, that plus two from three to five or from two to five is huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, the game played really well. At first, I actually told him this too. At first, I wasn't really into it because the game seemed really hard. Like, I mean, I was just, like, I played two games and just got destroyed. Like, saved one hostage. The rest were just annihilated. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? And it turns out, strategy, maybe use some. So I played it two more times after that. I actually won both times.
Okay.
And I set myself on a harder scenario because each terrorist will have a different threat level. And I'll have several, I believe. So I just was picking four. It goes from S, which is, I don't know what S stands for, but there was S all the way to K, and there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in between that. I was starting at 4. And then, like, so there was, at the 1 level, you get to roll 3 dice. And then from 2 to 5, you roll, I'm sorry, the 1 level, you roll 3 dice. At the 2 to 5, you roll 2 dice. And then at the 6, you roll 1 die, because he's getting ready to shoot people.
Okay.
And once you get to that K, that the bad spot, every time the threat level would go up, instead of it going up because it can't, he just shoots someone.
Shoots someone. Okay.
And in, what happens is you're having a conversation. The conversation will end because you run out of cards. You choose to end it. Some cards force you to end the conversation. So at that point, you then purchase new cards and swap out. And it's kind of like damsels in the fact that, like, it's not like damsels, but in your damsels in distress game, you have that card scenario where, like, I can use cards this turn, which means I can't use them next turn.
Sure.
So they kind of go off to the side. Then you can buy from this group here of cards. Because there's some cards that are zero to buy. So otherwise, you just have those every turn, and you'd always have a bunch of cards.
Sure.
So you kind of have to manage how many you want to use. So you set it off to the side, right? And then you, that next turn, those cycle back into their piles. Okay. And then you can buy more.
All right.
So
this is a solitaire game.
Yep. Yeah. It's a solo game. I don't think there's any variant to play. I could see how you could really easily make an extra variant with, like, one deck. You could make a variant for how to, make it a two-player, like a dueling game.
Yeah.
Which might be kind of fun. Yeah, so I'm going to send him some thoughts on it. I mean, it's a print and play. I mean, it's still a prototype. It needs work.
Sure.
There's some things, like, one of the things is I always had trouble buying conversation cards because they're kind of pricey, and, like, two is the cheapest. And, like, you earn conversation points, and that's what you spend on them. But, like, I feel like it would be great if there was one that was one conversation point. Just even if there was just one, because that would just be kind of, hey, I can afford to buy this. And it wouldn't have to be very good.
Yeah.
But no, the more I played it, the more I wanted to play it more. So
okay,
that
well,
was cool.
Good. You know? That's good. That's not at all like anything I've ever heard of before.
No, it's very different.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's well played. It's well thought out. It's well laid out. Yeah. You need a lot of table space, because there's a big line of cards, and there was probably a more efficient way to set it up than I did.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no, it was a good time, and I want to do more of that, like playing people's prototypes.
Yeah.
Like that was a lot of fun. So,
yeah.
So hey, what have you been playing, sir?
Well, play a little bit more Cards Against Humanity, and that's fun. That's still a very excellent game, but the same thing that I was concerned about before is in that I've kind of heard all the cards now, and they're not as funny anymore.
Right,
and
right.
So the fun comes from...
Kind of loses the shock value.
Yeah, the fun comes from seeing other people read them for the first time. And I played with a group of people who had already played it before, so I didn't even get that much out of it, unfortunately. So it's still a great game, and I still love it. I think, though, before I really play it a whole lot more, I need to either do it again with a group who's never seen it before, or get some of the expansions, because I think I have two expansions out now.
Okay.
To get some fresh stuff in there.
Right.
I think that's going to be key to the longevity of that game.
Is that they keep putting out expansions?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to me, I've never played the game, but the more I hear you talk about it, the more I feel like I would probably not enjoy the game after one play, because it would just be kind of like, nah, it's the same game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Unless the game has a way to make itself very different. I don't play a game like Apples to Apples very often for the same reason. You know what I mean?
Sure. But that's also why when you buy a box of Apples to Apples cards, there's like, 1,000 cards in that box.
Right. That's true.
Because they want to have so many options in there that you can play the game 6 times and not see the same cards.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the point. So that's kind of a bummer. But, it's still a good game, and I still definitely want to get the expansions at some point in the future.
That's cool.
Also played some solitaire on the computer.
Nice.
While I was editing the last episode of the show, I was sitting here on this junky old laptop that I took from my dad before he threw it in the trash, because the old computer here at Pro Design Studios had died on me.
Yeah.
And I was, and when I edit the show, obviously I'm not going to sit there and just watch the little, the little line move across the screen with.
Right.
I often will turn on solitaire to start, just have something else to occupy my brain while I'm listening. And discovered that this computer is so old and so awful, it can't run solitaire at the same time as it's playing an audio file.
Wow.
So playing an MP3 and playing solitaire at the same time, it can't handle it. Can't do it. The audio will freeze and stop and stutter, and it's a mess.
Wow.
So I had a very poor experience with solitaire this weekend, too.
I'm actually a huge fan of solitaire. Like, I have it on my phone.
Yeah.
And I play the normal solitaire, the Vegas style, one flip.
One flip. I think that's cheating.
Well, no. Here's my thing. One flip, and then I allow myself undos, right? And this is why. Because when I play solitaire, I want to win, right?
Yeah.
I want to know that if I lost at solitaire, it's because it was impossible to win that hand, right? Because it is possible to be impossible to win at a hand of solitaire, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I track my win average. My win average on solitaire is about 93%.
So you want, if you're going to play solitaire, you want to make sure that that you are perfect every time.
Yes. Because here's what I want to know. I want to know when I finish the game, did I lose because it was legitimate? I could not win this game. These three cards were locked. It was impossible to get to them. I will actually take a game almost back to the beginning to take a different route where there were two fives and I chose one on a pile instead of the one on the pile next to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll actually, because that's what I think is fun about solitaire. Like manually manipulating it to try and win, which is why I don't ever play solitaire with real cards, because I need the computer to assist me. Yeah. Right. But I really find that fulfilling, because it's like a mystery, right?
And cheating.
It's like you're trying to solve it's a different game, right? I mean, the standard solitaire game, if you're just trying to win by like playing like the three card flip, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is a lot of times you're going to lose. Why? Because Rob's a bad player? No, you're going to lose because solitaire is not a game that's always meant to be won.
Yeah.
So let's decrease the odds of that. Let's say, how good of a player is Rob? Because I would bet you could take a person who's not as good at solitaire as I am, right?
Uh-huh.
And you could give them the same scenario I have, and their win average would be a lot lower than mine. Because I'm meticulous.
So would you ever go to Vegas and pay $100 for a deck of cards and play solitaire to see if you can do better?
So it's Vegas-style single flip? If I could play it on the computer and do undo, you're trying right at it, because I know that I could win.
Well, no, but that's the thing. That's, you can't.
Right. If it was Vegas-style single flip.
Yeah.
And it was like $100 for a deck of cards?
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
What, did they pay like $5 a card? $5 a card on your ace?
I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah. Sounds about right.
I would try that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident in my abilities.
Okay.
I always thought it'd be fun to make a movie, a mockumentary, like a Christopher Guest style mockumentary, about the Solitaire World Championships. I don't know if those exist or not.
I don't know.
But I would play in the Solitaire World Championships too. So I'm a big Solitaire nerd. I'm glad you brought it up, man, frankly. I mean,
well, I am too. I learned something about you this evening. Get out of the studio. Let's move on to the mechanic of the week.
Mechanic of the week. So, I'm going to try it till something sticks, like throwing spaghetti at a wall. All
right. Mechanic of the week. And this week we didn't bring one of our own. We went to the community and asked the community to pitch us, say, "Hey, what mechanics do you want us to talk about, gang?"
And they responded.
Did they ever?
We had several responses, and we thank you to everyone who did. We will keep everyone's.
Yes.
We're only going to use one tonight, but we are going to keep everyone's because they were all great responses, and I'd like to do them at some point. But for now, we're just going to do one. It was submitted by Dan Masick, who is at D Masick on Twitter. That's DMASSEK. And he proposed to us that we talk about role selection. That's R-O-L-E selection. Like in a game, for instance, like Citadels or Lost Temple or Libertalia.
Okay. So, and I don't know any of those games.
Right. I know Citadels pretty well. I keep wanting to say Lost Citadels.
Yeah.
So I know Citadels pretty well. So let me explain to you how role selection works.
Okay,
right?
Please.
So every turn in Citadels, you're trying to build districts to a city, right?
Uh-huh.
It's a good time. And there are 9 characters you can choose from. And every turn, a different person is the king, and that person gets to look at all 9 characters and decide which character they want to be. Then they pass to the left, right?
Okay.
And that's the lie. You don't get to look at all 9. I think 3 get thrown off to the side. So you only get 6, but you get first dibs, right?
Okay.
So, in addition to getting to choose that character, and the characters, there's the king, the queen, the merchant, the assassin, the thief, the warlord, and the priest. I think that's most of them.
It's good enough.
So the idea is each one has a different special ability.
Mm-hmm.
All the districts have colors to them. So like the merchant, he gets extra money for every green district you have. And he automatically gets 2 extra gold, I think, every turn. Mm-hmm. So when you have him, you're going to make money, right?
Okay.
When you have the assassin, you go in a specific order. The assassin goes first, then the thief, then blah, blah, blah. So if you have the assassin, you get to kill someone. And you're like, "And I will kill the merchant." And then the merchant's dead and they don't get to use their turn, right?
Okay.
So you pick the assassin when you need to protect yourself. The thief says, "I'm going to steal from anyone but the assassin," because he's been revealed already. "I'm going to steal from the king." And then if somebody has chosen the king, when they flip it over that turn, they have to give you their money.
Okay.
So, there's some strategy here, right?
Yeah.
The strategy is, I pick the person I need to do what I need to do, but there's also the strategy of, I can impact other people if I know what they picked. I can impact them negatively, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you pick the king because you want to go first next turn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know someone's going to kill you. Because, like, the standard rule is you don't know who to kill, but the assassin, kill the king.
Kill the king, okay.
Because that person still gets to go first next turn, so you're going to deny them an advantage this turn to allow them to have an advantage next turn.
Okay.
If nobody picks the king, it stays with the same person, which is cool because sometimes that happens. The king will be buried. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So by choosing what role you're going to take on for that, and that's only for a specific round. It's not for the whole game.
Yeah, it's one round at a time.
One round at a time.
Every round it's separate.
You're picking what role you're going to take on. That changes what your goals are for that round.
Right.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting.
So the idea to me is, it's like we've talked before about character cards, right?
Yeah.
Where you play a specific character during the game.
Mm-hmm.
What's cool about it is you can rotate characters. I was saying, like, we were talking about Sentinels, because one of the other things somebody had said was something about Sentinels in the multiverse, and how it might be cool, what if you had, instead of a superhero, you had, like, you had like a Justice League or an Avengers, uh-huh. right? And so you had like 4 superheroes, And each turn, you could choose which one you wanted to act, right? Only one of them could act. Okay. So then you'd play that one, and, you know, Spider-Man would shoot his spider webs at stuff. Or maybe the next turn, you're like, man, I wish that I had a lightning storm. So then you would play Thor, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. But in this case, it wouldn't just simply be, I'm going to play that character's card. It would be, I'm going to pick up this character's deck and play as this character for this round.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Obviously, Sentinels might be a bad example because of the deck.
It's a pretty complex,
yeah. Whereas, like, with a game like Citadels, it's just as easy as you have, like, that one little character that who's going to do something, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe, I could see that maybe, too, if you were, have a game where you're like locked in a maze or something, right? Mm-hmm. You're locked somewhere and you're trying to escape. It's an mm-hmm. escape game. Like Alcatraz the Scapegoat, but better. Mm-hmm. With less exclusion. Okay. So I have a team, right?
Yeah.
This could work for a breaking and entering game too, like a safecracking team. Maybe it's like an Ocean's 11 game, right?
Okay.
So you've got your posse of people who are going to break in and do something. And each turn you can only put one out, right? Or maybe you can only put two out, right? But that's the person you're going to be that. You're going to assume their role that turn to get through the next step. So, all right, I need the guy who can pick the lock for this turn. Boom. Now I'm inside. Okay, now I need the face man to get past the guards. Boom. Now I need this guy to do this, right? Mm-hmm. I actually really like that idea.
It's not bad. Tell me more about what the goal in Citadels is. Because I'm still having trouble connecting that with choosing that role with... And doing those actions with what's your point?
Sure. Here? So the point of the game is to build until I think you get to 10 districts, right?
Okay.
And each district has a different point value. In the end, the people with the highest point value wins. You get bonuses for being the first one to go out, meaning the first person to build 10 mm-hmm. and such, right? Each district has a different color. Mm-hmm. And there's four colors, I think. And then there's also a fifth color, which is purple. And those are special places. Like, there's one called the hospital. And it says if you get assassinated on your turn, mm-hmm. you still get to collect money. Like, you still get to your income, your upkeep turn, even though you're dead. Okay. Or there's one that says, hey, whenever I'm out of money, I think it's like the poorhouse, and you're like, I'm out of money, you automatically get 2 gold out of the bank every time you spend all your money. Because that's how the poorhouse works.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
So the idea is to build all these things up, and you have to balance the expensive ones. Because, like, I used to always lose at the game because all I would do is try and build the most expensive districts. Because in the end, if I build 8 expensive districts and you build 10 mid-range districts, I'm going to beat you every time.
Yeah.
The problem is, when you do that, you end up building, like, 4 expensive districts.
And then you get...
Everyone else gets 10 and then you lose.
Got it. Okay.
So, yeah, and you use gold to do that. So, so each turn, it's kind of like... So, let me walk you through. Like, okay, so yeah. I've built my thing... now I need some more money because I've got a really good thing in my hand. I want to play it. All right. I'm going to take the merchant. Boom. I got the merchant now. Okay. I've got all my money. I know that next turn I just need 1 gold, which I'm going to get next turn. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I need that, but I don't want someone to screw me. Now it gets to me. I'm going to take the assassin. Why? Because the assassin goes first. No one can screw the assassin. So I play the assassin. I kill some random person because I don't care. And then I play my thing after I've collected my money. And I play my really cool city district out there, right? Mm-hmm. Now the next turn, now everybody sees that and they're like, oh, I want to destroy that. And the warlord can actually destroy your district. So I'm like, okay, next turn now I need the priest. Because the priest says no one can destroy my districts. So I get the priest that turn and I play it down. So does that kind of give you a strategy
idea? Okay, I'm getting that, okay. Yeah. All right.
So.
Okay. So, Toilet Wars. Okay, so we are each competing plumbing companies. Okay.
Yes.
All right, and we are trying to get the most contracts.
Okay.
Okay. Get the most jobs. You know.
Right.
Because we want to grow our business. Okay. And we can just say the most whoever ends the game with the most money is the winner. Okay. Because ultimately that means you're the most successful business. Right. Okay.
Right.
And we have various roles. I mean, obviously, we have the plumber.
Right.
Okay. The plumber fixes problems and he installs new plumbing.
Okay.
Okay. We have the receptionist back at the office, who can take incoming calls and, and call up new jobs. We have the we have the high school kid or maybe the middle school kid who drops cherry bombs down the toilet.
Okay.
And can destroy everyone's plumbing.
Okay.
Okay. But so you know, maybe we have the woman with long hair who clogs up the drain with her long hair, you know, with wadded up hairballs. We have different roles that would take place in running the business and fixing problems. We'd have other roles that are used to clog up the plumbing and cause problems. Okay?
Just trying to wrap my head around the fact that you're actually talking about toilet wars.
Well, I'm trying to not knowing anything about this mechanic at all, I'm trying to put it into something to kind of facilitate my learning here.
Legitimize it.
Facilitate. Legitimize implies that my learning is usually a waste of time.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I'm listening. I'm totally on board.
Lost my train of thought here. I'm trying to put something together here.
You've got all these different roles. All
right, yeah. So some roles are used to build your business. Other roles are used to wreck other people's work.
Okay.
But that might then also mean giving them more money to come back in and fix those repairs, fix those problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the game is people every round taking on the role of one of these things to either to sabotage their opponent's work or to get more work for themselves. And on one role or one round, I might want to be the receptionist who's getting hired for a job. And then the next round, I'm going to be the plumber who's going to go out and do the job. But the plumber can only do the job if he can buy supplies from the supplier. So hopefully somebody else is the supplier that round and is willing to sell me some supplies. I have to negotiate with them. Okay. You know? And then the next round, if I'm the plumber, I got to be the plumber two rounds in a row because one round I got to buy supplies. The second round I got to install it. You know, I got to fix the repair. And then I got to take money from the person that round who is the homeowner or whatever, the client.
Right.
You know, they're going to give me money. So maybe that kind of round robin kind of thing would make sense. This is kind of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, you just made toilet wars sound almost legitimate.
Yeah.
Which is scary. Because it's toilet wars. But I'll give you that it is almost legitimate.
But that's kind of the idea that we're talking about here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've never played anything that does that. That sounds really interesting. I'd like to try it. I would really like to try that. You have Citadel?
Yeah. I'm all about Citadel.
We'll have to try that sometime.
Yeah. You would like it.
I'd be very interested to try it.
It's a lot of fun, and it's a thinking game. I mean,
mm-hmm.
like, you'll kill yourself thinking about it. And it's not fun to play with someone who's really bad at strategy.
Mm.
So there's always that. You guys, I mean, you and your wife are good at it.
Yeah.
I just mean because if you get, like, one person that's just like, I'm going to take the assassin and kill someone every turn.
I have a friend like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
And a game called Toilet Wars, it's very, very strategic and is a real thinker. It's kind of an oxymoron that I like. Or I guess it would be a contradiction. But
you really like gross games, I think, is the thing. You're like, how can I make a game more gross?
Yeah.
Because that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Make a game more gross.
There's nothing wrong with that. Well, actually, there's sometimes things wrong with that.
I'm just saying it seems like that's what your goal is most of the time. Make games gross.
No, not necessarily. Hasty generalization.
Hasty generalization.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part where I just repeat the things you say in a different tone.
So I think it's time for us to move on.
Made a discovery.
It's probably time for us to move on. And now it's time for practicing the pitch. And Jason has a special announcement for us here. Jason.
I do. We today are announcing our first ever Building the Game contest.
Whoa!
Contest?
Oh,
it's crazy!
Oh, this is awesome!
So here's what the contest is. What we want to give you a chance to do is come on the show and pitch your game to us. How cool does that sound?
Sounds fantastic. Not just us, but pitch it to the whole listenership.
Right.
Everybody. Yes. Everybody else can hear it along with us.
So at least the person who applied for it and my mom will hear it. So.
I'll listen again. I promise. Well, right. Tell us more.
So let's talk about the rules for this. First of all, this time around, we just want unpublished game designers.
Yeah.
So you can't have a game out there yet that's been published. What we're going to ask you to do is email us a pitch. Now, we don't want to know about your game. We want you to pitch yourself. Pitch why you should come on the show and be the person to get to pitch their game. So to do that, you just have to write a little thing about yourself as a game designer, why you want to come on the show. You're going to email that to btgcontest@gmail.com. That's btgcontest@gmail.com. You're like, Jason, that's not your normal email. That's correct. It's not. That email is going to go to a third-party screener. And what they're going to do is they're going to pull out all your identifying information, and they're just going to send us your pitch. We're doing that because we've met a lot of unpublished game designers. Some of them, I'm sure, will want to apply, because why wouldn't they want to?
I mean, yeah.
And so we don't want to have any bias to it. We want to keep it honest. So Rob and I will be making the choices, but we won't know who we're picking. And then once we bring it back to the third party, they'll tell us, and then we can all be overjoyed. So you need to do this starting today.
Starting right away.
The 10/15.
Yep.
You have till 10/31 to do it.
So October 31st, Halloween.
Halloween.
Get it to us by the end of the day on Halloween.
Yep. And we will take all those, and then soon after that, we'll announce it. Mm-hmm. We can't say exactly when, just because we, as you know, we pre-record the shows. So, yeah, I think I hit all the bases there.
I think so.
So, to kick this contest off and to kind of get us jump-started into it, we've invited our friend Wilhelm Rumpf here. He's an old friend of ours. You guys have probably heard us talk about him before, I think. He is here to pitch a game idea he has. Mm-hmm. It's a party game. I'm going to spoil that. But Will is here to pitch that, to kind of show you what you'll get to do if you win the contest. So, hello, Will.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Fantastic. And yourself?
Oh, awesome. It's good. Great to be here.
We're happy to have you.
Yay.
This is Will. He's one of the founders of Flipworks Media. They're our friends that were kind enough to let us use their studio a few weeks ago. Back when we were having some trouble here at Poorly Designed Studios. So thank you again for your hospitality and your kindness and your generosity. And now, please, tell us about this game. What do you got?
All right, so my game is called Shame. And it's called Shame because everybody has a little bit of shame in their life. Stuff that they've done, stuff that they've been involved with, you know, just shameful things. And this helps codify it or tell you how much shame you have.
My life is filled with shame.
Yeah.
Mostly, Rob is just a shameful,
I'm a big ball of shame.
One of the things Rob is shameful about is the fact that he's wearing Abbott and Costello pajama pants.
No, that's not shameful. I just watched that movie last night on AMC.
Dude, it's great.
The Mummy.
You know what? I'm very comfortable right now. You guys, probably less so.
Well, I had to drive here, Will rode a small motorcycle here.
I did. Like I'm a fat dude on a little bike.
It was like a clown motorcycle.
No shame there.
No shame at all.
Lots of shame in the game, though.
So, okay. So, Shame is a 2-to-8-person party card game. It's fast-paced. It shouldn't take any more than 25 minutes to get through a total play session.
Okay.
It's 2-to-8 players. There's a maximum of 19 turns in the game. The last turn in the game for all the players is to dole out your cards to screw everyone else around you.
Okay.
So the cards each have, out of the 108-card deck, a different shameful item on it. And they're all rated from 1 to 2, and then 5 and 6. And I'll get to reasons why I don't have 3 and 4 ratings on there in a minute.
Better get to that.
Yeah.
Better.
The listeners right now are concerned.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. They're very concerned about that.
So, like, say one of the shameful things is has moobs or man boobs.
Man boobs.
Right? That would probably be a number five on the shame list.
Really that shameful?
I think so. You know, you wear a lot of loose shirts.
I also see booger wiper.
Yes. That would probably be a one or two.
Uh-huh. Everybody wipes a booger now.
Yeah. You know, it's not so shameful until you get caught.
Yeah, that's true.
And then it is definitely shameful.
Right.
You know, so that those numbers give you your card values on each card.
Okay.
And so on the dice, there's 1, 2, and 5 and 6, and then spots 3 and 4 are an FU, which lets you take the card and then give it to whoever else you want, or an ANS for Ain't No Shame In That, which lets you discard that card.
Okay.
So when you're playing, you pull the card off the deck, You look at it and you put it face down on the table so nobody else can see it.
Okay.
You then have to roll the card's number in order to keep it. So if it's a face value of 1, you have to roll a 1. If you don't roll a 1, you don't keep the card. So you have a 50-50 chance of keeping this card or getting rid of this card on every single turn. So everybody's going to end up with shame. If you roll an FU, you flip that card over, you show everyone, and then you give it to whoever you want.
Okay.
If you roll an ANS, you flip that card over, show everyone, and then shove it back into the bottom of the deck.
Okay.
Now, throughout the deck, there will also be FU cards and ANS cards that you can draw. And if you draw one of those, you just automatically put it into your hand that you keep.
Okay.
Until you get to a shame card. And then you put that back face down, and then you go through the roll. And then at any point during the game, if you have an FU or ANS card, if you get like a 6 shame card, you can just automatically get rid of that if you have one of those cards. So it gives like a kind of like a risk variable to it, you know, or a screw you variable, because at the very end of the game, everybody's going to get to go around and dole out all those cards anyway. So it's, do you want to dole it out now, or do you want to hold on to it and then screw everyone else at the very end?
Okay. Okay, so take me through a round of the game then.
Okay. So the very first player would pull a card, look at it, put face down on the table.
So you do get to look at what's on the card.
Yes, you do.
You don't show anyone else.
You don't show anybody else, just like you don't show anybody else what's in your hand.
Okay.
So that way it keeps the mystery about, you know. So you look at that, and then you roll.
I roll the die.
Yep, if you roll the face value of the card, then you pick that card up and you put it in your hand, but you still don't show anybody what it is.
So when you say roll the face value of the card, it's either got a 1, 2...
5 or 6.
So you have a 15% chance of keeping that card? Is that correct?
A 1 in 6 chance.
Is that about
15? No, 2 in 6. So you have a 1 in 3 chance. Because you could roll... If it's a 1-2 card, you could roll a 1 or a 2 and take the card?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so it is a 1-2 card. I get it. So you have a 33% chance of keeping the card then.
Yeah.
1 in 3.
Yeah.
So 2-6, 1 in 3.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I was thinking that each card had just a 1 or a 2 or a... You know what I mean? So that would mean that you had a lot less chance. So I was just curious.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Yeah, okay. So you roll a die. If you get the number, you pick up the card and put it in your hand.
Yep, okay. Put it in your hand, and then that's the end of your turn.
If you... And then we're talking about a 1-2 card. Let's say I roll a 5-6. I don't get it. It just stays out there in play.
Well, no. If you roll a 5 or a 6...
Uh-huh.
Say it's a 1 card,
yep.
And you roll a 5. If you roll a 2, 5, or 6,
okay,
then you don't keep that card. You just slide that card back into the deck.
Okay.
And your turn is done.
Okay.
If you roll an FU, then you pick that card up, show everyone, and then give it to whoever you want.
Okay.
Now, do they put it in their hand, or do they have to put it off to the side?
No, they can just put it in their hand, because everybody's seen it. You know, it's kind of like, I've shamed you with...
Okay.
Moves.
Okay.
You know. And so everybody kind of knows what you have after a while.
All right.
And so if you roll an ANS, you still show everyone the card, but you shove it right back into the deck.
Okay.
So because there's no shame in that, and you just...
Yeah.
Goes back in the deck, and you shove it in the deck anywhere?
Yep.
Okay.
So now, if you were to, so you go through the entire game, right?
Yep.
You went through, and I know with this game you have a set number of rounds.
Yep.
Like, so rather than having, that's what you said earlier.
Yeah.
So, like, you set a number of rounds, and then that's how many you play. It's not like you play till the deck's gone. You just, that's...
Nope.
So, that's interesting. I think that's cool.
And so if you have, and the way I have it set up, if you have an even number of players, then you play an odd number of rounds.
Okay.
That way the actual gameplay... of drawing the cards is even, and then the very last round is the screw everyone round.
Right.
That round doesn't involve any dice. It's just passing out cards and trading.
Okay, so we get to the last round, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Walk me through this. We get to the last round.
And by this time, everybody's got a hand of shame cards.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So now, last round, what happens?
So on the last round, the very first player, it jumps from the very first player that started off the game to the very last player.
Okay.
So in So you're, say you're going clockwise.
So you're going like reverse order then?
Yeah, you're going reverse order, starting with that very last player again. So basically the last round, he's getting two turns.
Okay.
So he rolls the dice, pulls his card, whatever he does, and then instantly goes into putting the dice away or to the side, and then looking at his cards, seeing how many FU cards or ANS cards he has, and then he doles out the punishment to whoever he likes.
So he would play an ANS card, and then that would allow him to get rid of another card in his hand?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so, because the object is to end up with the least amount of shame at the end as possible.
Right. That makes sense. So it's like golf. You want a low score.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
And so he doles out the FU cards, the ANS cards, and then that's when he's done, when he can't make any more doles, he's done with his turn and goes to the next player.
Is he then just out of the game and nobody can give him anything else?
No, he's still in the game. People can still give him. Yeah. So it's kind of like, do I screw you or do I screw you? Because I think you're going to screw me more if I screw you.
Okay.
So that can be risky because I could think, well, Rob has a lot of cards. I'm just going to try and make him lose, right? So I'm going to give him a lot more, but he could have a lot of cards that allow him to pass cards back to people or to ditch cards. So that could be risky. I wonder about, it might be interesting, this is just a thought, but it might be interesting if on that last turn you actually played around until everyone couldn't do anymore. The reason I say that is because you might get a little more interaction. Like if, you know, so it's on the last person, they play an ANS card, drop something, now goes to the next person, all the way back to the beginning.
Oh, see, yeah, that makes more sense, because then it's just basically going around in a big circle like until everybody's done.
It's like you went around to wind up, and now you're unwinding.
Yeah.
The
No, I like that. And if you don't have a card, then you can just yell pass or whatever.
Hmm. Right.
Okay.
Percentage-wise, what would the specialty cards, the FU and the ANS, be to the other ones, do you think?
Well, that's, I figured they would probably be about no more than like 20 to 25%. Okay. I mean, and that's, I think that would be a lot. That I feel like that would have to be figured out in actual gameplay.
Yeah, I think
that'd be a prototype.
But I do have it in the rules that where if you draw one, you continue drawing those cards until you get to a shame card. So you could end up with like three of them right in a row.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That you could either discard right then or keep.
So people would know that you had those cards.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but in the whole scheme and shuffle of everything, you would tend to lose track.
Right.
Unless you're really good at counting cards.
Yeah.
And that's no fun.
And it's a party game, so if you are that coherent to count cards, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
That's true.
You've misunderstood the idea of a party game.
Okay, so the whole point of the game is to shame each other, give each other shames. And you can defend against those shames with your FU cards and your ANS cards.
Yep.
Okay. So basically the game is all about that take that idea.
Yep.
You know, I'm gonna give that to you. Oh, no, you're not. I'm gonna give it back to you, kind of stuff. And then you said some risk-reward stuff in terms of taking the card into your hand so that you might be able to give it to somebody else later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like you might want to keep a six if you have an FU card to back it up, because that would be a powerful card to pass on to someone else.
Well, but do you have that choice? Because I thought you were rolling a die then to see if you get that or not.
Well, that's, say you end up with the card, you know, on the dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you already have an FU card, you could either discard it right then, on your turn, or you could hold on to it till the end and see how it all plays out.
So if somebody else gives that to you, you have the option of either taking it and holding on to it for later.
Yeah.
Or ditching it right away if you have the card in your hand.
Yeah.
It might be fun, too, and this is just, as you guys know, I just like throwing crazy ideas out there. If you had a system where, so if it's a one, right, that's a one on the back. Now, does the number on the back correspond to the shame on the front?
Yes.
Okay. So if it's a one, if I roll a one, I have to keep it. But if I roll, like, I guess what I'm picturing is like, so there's two numbers on every card, right? The keep value and the pass value. And you could choose, depending on what you rolled, like, okay, so if I get a 6, say that's a pass value, I can keep it. I mean, I can... So there's a 1 says you keep it, a 6 says you do what you want with it. Which means I could keep it, I could give it, or I could tit, or I could ditch it. Makes the game more complex, which is... I always want to make games more complex.
Yeah.
But it would offer some more choice
right
into it.
It would give a little more... Because I think on the outset, at least the strategy that I would see, you pretty much just want to keep the cards till the end, because then you can play them out with your specialty cards. Whereas if you play them early on with the specialty cards, other than the Ain't No Shame or shoving it back in the deck, you're kind of just arming your opponents. That's what I would think. You know what I mean? Like, I'm now... So I'm giving 6-pointers to my opponents mid-game. They're just going to hold out of those, and they're just going to give them right back to me at the end.
Well, possibly, but they may not be getting the FU or Ain't No Shame cards.
That's also true, yeah.
And they'd be doing the same thing to you. They'd be arming you. And actually, you know, that's an interesting point of view to say that, I mean, the whole... The bulk of the game is you basically handing ammunition to your opponents.
Yes.
And then the last part of the game is that changeover. And we've talked about that changeover idea before. And then the last round of the game is that changeover where it just, okay, now I'm going to attack you with all this ammunition you just gave me.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting point of view. I hadn't thought of that before.
Another way to think of it, too, would be that, to go more into that idea that you're saying, Rob, is when you hit that number, maybe you get to choose who gets it. Do you want it? Do you want to pass it to someone else?
You know what I mean? Oh, well, that'd be good, too.
Just that would play more into what you're saying, Rob.
Yeah.
That way, like, you have to decide, like, oh, this is a 6. But I don't think they have the ability to give it back to me, so I'm going to give it to them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, then that would kind of negate the FU.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's true. So I guess that there is that already kind of built in. So that's true.
Yeah. Because at some point, you have to keep the card. You have to get some shame.
And what might also be fun would be that, if you were going to try and make it super strategic... Well, I guess you would always know, right? Like, so if I draw a card and it's a specialty card, I'm going to put it in my hand and I'm going to draw another one and then lay it down. So they know I just got a specialty card. Now, they don't know what it is, but they know I got one. So, yeah. It would be... See, I wouldn't be able to play this game without trying to have, like, too much strategy. Rob's got 2. Will's got 3. Yeah. I've got 4. Okay, what am I doing?
Well, and that's why it works as a party game, because I mean, there's more... The odds end up screwing you more than the strategy does.
Right.
I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, and that could be one criticism, is that there's so much randomness in that, that maybe it'd be difficult to strategize.
See, I would argue that that's like trying to strategize with apples to apples.
Yeah.
Which is a party game. Like, if you're playing with a good group with apples to apples, and I know, like, Rob will think that this joke is funny. I will make this joke. With these cards, and then Rob will say, ha, 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 I picked this one, and then I'm like, yay, point. But, like, when you're playing with just, like, a dumb group of people, or a group of, like, mixed people, like, age-wise, where some of the people are, like, teenagers, or people that just don't really care about the game, and they're just like, I'm gonna pick Susie, she's funny, and she told me which one she put down. That game has happened to me before.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's, like, the worst apples-to-apples game you ever played.
Yeah.
And there's no strategy. You're literally just... I just stopped looking. I just started throwing cards down because I didn't care.
Yeah.
So I would argue that there's more strategy here than there is there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But yeah, one thing that there is a lot of playing itself at the beginning, right? Like, when you're just rolling, if you're always just it's completely dependent on that die roll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it seems like it'd be nice to be able to put some additional player choice into that.
I don't know how to do that.
I'm not sure.
That's something I think in playtesting you'd figure out, whether or not, because if that was enough, that might be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I would think it would be like that the first 4 or 5 turns, and then after that you would start to build up enough, if there was enough FU and ANS cards within the deck, you know, throughout it.
That's true.
I would think eventually you would get, once you get past that first initial round of everyone, if you've got 8 players, you know... then you would be all right. It would the game would pick up, and then
you're right. Once you get a hand going, yeah,
it might be fun too. Another thought with the specialty cards to add more. Then on the dice you could just have those 2, but why not have other ones? Like, have one where You draw a card and it says you randomly switch shame with another person. So you each shuffle up, give each other a card.
Oh, that's cool. Sure. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, or even trade hands entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know? So
that kind of stuff could be silly and
because with a party game, I think that's the ticket. That's,
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
More
yeah.
goofy player interaction, and you've got some of that, and I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I personally would try and amp that up more, but again, it makes the game more complicated. But that's what I always want to do. So
yeah,
you know.
Well, I always want a party game to be simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right.
I want something that I can play smashed.
Yeah,
and you know.
I think you have.
Yeah,
I think you have a structure to where, as long as the different specialty cards were simple.
Yeah.
Like ANS says, "Ain't no shame. Discard a card. Done." Right. Mm-hmm. Like if it was like trade hands, you and another player trade hands.
Mm-hmm.
Pass to left. All players pass hands to left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff, you know.
Well, that's kind of like the Uno risk and reward system.
Yeah.
Right, where you just don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I think you've got something. I think a lot of play testing is in order.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great theme. It's a great idea.
It's a good theme. Yeah.
The being a party game, Shaya, you know, lots of table talk, lots of trash talking at the table.
And it's got, I mean, it's more adulterated. It's got kind of a Cards Against Humanity feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's for an 18 and up crowd. It seems like. Look, we probably shouldn't read too many of the shame options off your list. Some of them are maybe a little inappropriate for our show, but, well, can I?
Yeah, go right ahead.
You've got some shames on here. Spray on tan. Smells like patchouli.
Oh, that's my favorite one. I didn't see that when I looked through the list.
Where's Monster Gear? That's a good one. Because, man, I hate when people have that Monster logo all over
Or Tap Out Gear.
Tap Out Gear, yeah, yeah. I can't read some of these.
No. I looked at the list when Will first sat down. I was looking at the list before he explained the game, just I was curious. And, some of those I was like, we won't be reading all these anymore.
Okay, how about has a peanut allergy? It's not their fault.
That's shameful.
Dude, a lot of the stuff on that shameful. List is not their fault. So
I think as long as you don't get government assistance for it, as far as like being blind or something, it's shameful.
Okay.
You know.
Pit stains.
That's shameful.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Because it can happen to anybody, but hey, watch it, you know.
Oh, man. Absorbed fetal twin. Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, wow.
Huh.
So
works at a gas station.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done it.
I worked. I'm at a not gas
proud
station.
Of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I worked at a gas station for years. I mean, when I was going to school, I worked at a gas station.
McRib eater.
Yeah, dude.
I like McRibs. They're freaking delicious.
Dude, well, man, it's not even real rib.
I know. I don't care. It's delicious.
Obviously, this does bring up another point, which is you would have some licensing stuff to go through. Depending on what you wanted to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McDonald's might not like you say it's shameful to eat a McRib.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. I mean, your
I've
picture...
I've never had a McRib.
Your picture is on People of Walmart. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's... I don't know if that's okay or not. It's the kind of thing to look into. Right. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on my list, I have like 58 things right now, and probably 30 of them are good.
that's a process.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a process. You'll want to come up with way more than you need, so you can kind of hone it down to the really ones you really like.
Right.
So.
Right.
So
good, man. Awesome. I like it.
Well, thanks.
Yes. Yeah. And thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, no problem. Oh, I also want to ask the listeners, if you guys have any shame, you know.
Yeah.
Email the show, send in your shame list, because I need them.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of tapped out.
Well, or they could tweet you with probably the HoboCon email?
HoboCon?
They could tweet him at HoboCon, HOBOCON.
Uh-huh. Unless you could tweet Will. Unless you'd rather a different...
No, HoboCon works.
Okay. I know you're on that one a lot. So.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes back to past references of the show for long-time listeners. So. Right.
True. So, there's a good way. Otherwise, if you email us too, that's totally fine. We'll be happy to pass along the Will.
Get that back to Will.
Shame.
All right. Cool. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah. Our pleasure. Moving on then. I think it's time for our plugs tonight, but actually we're gonna skip plugs again because we have a few more emails we want to talk about, right?
We do.
We do. We love it so much when people contact us and send us emails and messages and all kinds of stuff. Thank you, guys.
We love it.
Yes, it's great. So you got something to start us off here, sir.
I sure do. So plug for our Facebook page.
Hey, hey.
Hey, since the last episode, we have noticed that we've been getting some more likes on our Facebook page. Yep. Thank you for that.
Thank you a million times.
Still trying to get to that magic 100 number.
100 and your super secret surprise.
Super secret surprise. It's going to be amazing.
I can't wait to find out.
I'm not saying it involves us mailing ice cream to every single listener, because it doesn't.
You better not say that.
But that would be awesome. I'm sure you'd be happy to have me spend my money to do that.
Certainly.
So what we did have was we had a nice post on there. By a newly person who liked it.
Mm-hmm.
We had mentioned to the listeners last episode,
two shows ago, yep,
that we were drinking alt-style beer,
and
did not understand what that was.
Uh-huh.
So they were nice enough to give us a link to the Wikipedia of what alt beer is, which A-L-T-B-I-E-R.
Uh-huh.
That is a German-style beer. It's a German-style brewing process.
Mm-hmm.
And so... That's where you get that flavor from. That's mm-hmm. where you get the kind of beer. What's funny is I've actually had alt beer before.
Oh, and didn't make the connection?
I didn't realize that alt style was the same as alt beer. But it's our pal Nate Doherty, who we mentioned before.
Certainly.
So thank you, sir. We appreciate that.
Yeah, and, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We are now educated. I actually read the whole Wikipedia post because I love beer and was interested in understanding how that exactly worked. So.
Excellent.
You have an email.
I do have an email. It's a good one. I'm actually not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of long. But I will read the meat and potatoes of it here. And this is from the Zodiac team. I don't really know an individual's name on this, but it's just the Zodiac team. And the writer says, "Hey guys, I'm your new biggest fan. I just started listening yesterday, and I've spent the last 2 days listening to all your podcasts and cracking up at your banter. Aw, thanks. I didn't think we were that funny, but that's nice to know."
He didn't say laughing with us.
At us, that's true. Up at your banter. Yeah, good point. Good point. Okay, I'm a new and upcoming game designer myself, and I'm really impressed by your critical thinking when it comes to game theory, and your game pitches are inspiring. Aw. That's so nice.
Makes me feel good.
Yeah. Somebody likes us.
Maybe somebody will write a mean email, because we would read that too.
We sure would. I do really like the camp idea. He's talking about your camp troublemakers pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
"Though I think you might be overcomplicating it with your night and day mechanic. What I'd like to suggest is for the two of you to play Evo. My playtest group and I picked it up last week just to try it out and review it, and at first I was really confused by it. But once you finally start playing the game, it is a lot of fun. It uses a very clean auction system." Yeah, I know, that's an oxymoron. "But if there was ever a right way to have an auction system, it's this one. Which gives your dinosaur..." Oh, by the way, it's a game about dinosaurs.
I'm in.
Yeah. "It gives your dinosaur special abilities, and I think you could use this mechanic as a way to collect materials for your pranks. Another system the game uses is a terrain wheel. This wheel lets you know what areas are safe, dangerous, and deadly. You turn the wheel in different directions based on what is depicted on a token that you randomly pick up at the start of every round. This mechanic could be useful to you for deciding where the camp staff is, so you know where the bigger risk is to collect the greater reward."
I'll just interrupt you for a second. That's mm-hmm. a phenomenal idea.
It is a great idea, yeah.
Because I had struggled with how to decide where the camp staff was.
Yeah.
And even having during the day, having them be in the certain areas,
mm-hmm.
like, I really need to get something out of the kitchen. Oh, that's where the counselors are, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Evo, that sounds neat.
Yeah.
I don't know anything at all about it. I think I've seen the box before on the shelf. But, yeah, I don't know anything about it. Then he goes on to say, "Again, I strongly advise for you guys to check it out, and I wish you the best of luck and continue being boss."
Yeah.
We're boss.
Like apparently. A boss.
Like a boss.
So. But, yeah. Hey, thanks, man, for that email.
Yeah, thank you very much.
For that email.
Thank you, Zodiac team. They go on to talk about some stuff that they're working on, but we don't want to... we don't want to broadcast that if any of this is not public or anything.
Yes.
We don't know.
So, but awesome.
Yeah, thank you for those kind words. Thank you for the comments and the suggestions on that. I don't know, Jason, if you're planning on taking that game to prototype anytime soon. I know you're working on some other stuff right now.
Oh, I'm working on a prototype for that, kind of on the side.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a big prototype put together.
Yeah, sure is.
So, yeah, so I've been kind of refining the rules as I try to build the prototype.
Okay.
I have worked on another prototype too that's a little bit simpler.
Okay.
So
excellent.
that you get to see later tonight.
So yeah.
Ooh. It's exciting.
Yeah. But actually, weird. I think listeners will have already heard that.
Oh, they will. You're right. So they'll have already heard, whoa, that's funny.
I know. Oh, it's awkward. Like back in time, but in the future, it's...
Yeah. It hasn't happened yet for us, but it's happened for you.
It happened last week.
We're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
So. Yeah. All right.
Great Scott.
See, okay.
The correct response to that was, this is heavy, just so you know.
Oh, I haven't seen those movies in so long.
So good.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, thanks again, everybody, for writing in. Keep them up. Keep up the comments, the Twitter comments. Send us emails. Contact us on Facebook, all that good stuff. I think that about wraps us up for tonight, doesn't it?
It does wrap us up.
Yeah, all right. So thank you again, everybody, for listening and for tuning in and for your kindness and your generosity and for your attention. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, which is at podcastbtg. There it was. My Twitter is @poorly_design. Jason is @JASlingerland. I haven't even been drinking tonight. I don't know what my problem is.
It's that diet cream soda you're drinking.
Oh, man. It's hard stuff. It's bad news. You can like us on Facebook. You can please give us 5-star review on iTunes. And did I forget anything else?
Just a quick reminder about the contest.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
The email for the contest, again, is btgcontest@gmail.com. That'll get it to our screeners.
Yep.
And they'll forward it on us. So yeah. We'll get excited about reading it. So
I'm really pumped. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Me too.
And again, remember, it's tell us why you would be a good game designer, why you should be allowed to pitch your game on our show. Don't pitch the game, because we want to hear that fresh on the show.
Right.
Yeah, tell us why we should pick you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
If you get a business card from a Japanese or a Chinese person, you're supposed to put it in a place of honor in your front pocket.
Is that so?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I always shove it down my pants.
You would.
You down the back.